Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
On the last episode of Guilt.
She tended to hang around with because of the maturity, hang around with older adolescents and and I think that got her into trouble down the track, no doubt.
She said, "If I'm not coming home, Mum, I'll let you or Dad know." That was her words to me.
That's what she said to me.
Oh, Mum, gave me a kiss goodbye and said, "If I'm not coming home, I'll let you or Dad know." I got the knock on the door at 8 o'clock in the morning. Police standing there, I knew straight away. I just knew. And I knew the policeman, knew his wife and that. Yeah, 8 o'clock. I saw him standing there, I said, I knew. Didn't think he was here for anything else. I just knew something bad.
The family of a Melton teenager who died 6 years ago are for the first time appealing for further information about the girl's death before the release of a coroner's finding later this month.
But she was just so happy, so bubbly, smiling all the time. Like, she was just so much fun to be around. She was just beautiful.
If I could go back now knowing what I know now, they'd be dead. Yeah, I'd be in jail.
And she got stolen away from me. And those culprits who did it, I want to catch them. I want to get them. And they know who they are. And I won't ever give up.
From Brevity Studios, I'm Ryan Wolfe. And this is Guilt.
The sheriff might have got the evidence, I should give to the court, or to them.
That's right.
The warden in this case should be the truth, the whole truth, and the truth.
Thank you. You may take a seat if you wish, and you'd rather stand, do so. Sreder, I think I left on one there. Last week, on some statements.
Detective St. Constable, you've been involved in this matter. You were the attending member, is that correct? And you conducted an inquiry as to the nature or cause of the death of Alana Cecil.
Yes.
On the last occasion that the matter came to court, you've taken some or made further investigations since then. Are you able to detail that to the court today?
The last time I went to court, there was a fellow in Tasmania who had indicated via telephone that he may have some information which may bring light onto who may have been with Alana on the night. We sent a report over to Tasmania and got a statement back. The statement really didn't take the matter much further. He was unable to sort of say whether Alana was with the group or whatever, but he gave some details of a car that was there. And at an ATM, I made inquiries with the bank and found out that ATM where he saw the car was actually closed at that time in the morning, so I was unable to find out who was in that car to follow that up. There was also, Mr. Cecil indicated to me that there was some Tasmanians who had been living in a caravan park that Alana was associated with, And so I requested to try and made it simple to try and get it was the name of the person. They'd brought this information forward, but it was sort of Woody the deceased. His half sister was actually very close friends of the deceased, so just for elimination purposes, DNA was requested. Had some difficulty in obtaining DNA from intrastate with legislation. We managed to get around that, and they've both been excluded. It's just been a course. I've just been following back, and I've obtained some more DNA of other people just for exclusion purposes at this stage. But there's been nothing more come to light to identify who was with Alana on the night just prior to.
That is the voice of Senior Detective Geoffrey Hythorn in the Coroner's Court of Victoria, Melbourne, on August 12th, 2002. Presiding over this hearing is Coroner Byrne, who is being assisted in questioning by Senior Constable Fitzgerald. After not one, not two, but three adjourned inquests over a period of 6 years since Alana's death, this mention hearing is the first time the facts of Alana's case have been heard in court. In this evidence, you'll hear mention of DNA. It took almost 2 full years before swabs taken from Alana's body were analysed, and on September 11, 1998, it was discovered that there was semen present on and inside Alana's body from not one, but two unidentified men.
You've been liaising constantly with Nigel Hall from the Victorian Forensic Science Centre, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And what has he told you in relation to the DNA database and the cross-checking, etc., of the database?
It's done on a daily basis. We've done quite a few, and he informs me as soon as a hit or a match is found, I'll be notified.
And Alana's DNA, or the DNA that was located on Alana's body, is certainly listed as an outstanding profile?
Yes.
And will be listed as such until a match is located, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
In relation to that matter, all that is going to tell you who she was with that night.
That's right. That's just for my completeness and for Mr. Cecil, I'm just trying to establish who was with her on the night. There's no more than that.
I've looked at all the material. That's one of the questions I meant to ask. Has the matter ever actually been in an open court prior to today?
No.
It's been various matters listed and then withdrawn.
Yes.
As I understand from what I learned from other coroners. So this is the first open court hearing.
Yes.
We've had this mention hearing.
Yeah.
Is there anything in the material, in your view, that you've seen, which would tend to indicate that she was the victim of a homicide?
No.
There are a number of, in fact, there are quite a number of unanswered questions, are there not?
That's great.
Yeah. About the only thing that seems to be reasonably certain that has been able to be established as a result of this investigation is the cause of death established by autopsy.
Yes.
In your view, at this point, how many witnesses have you interviewed and or taken statements from?
Statements, I believe, there's 30-odd that I've spoken to. Countless others.
Yeah, yeah. Scores.
Yeah.
It'll be fair to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some of those, Mr. Sessions requested I've since go back and take statements from them. So, again, for their social sort of lifestyles, I haven't been able to do that.
And in spite of this investigation, you've been unable to establish who she was with at about the time of her death, or indeed, perhaps even where death occurred.
That's correct.
Are there at this point in time any other reasonable, I use the word reasonable, lines of investigation you think should be pursued?
No.
This podcast is going to follow two lines of investigation. On one hand, I'm going to be searching for the truth of what happened to Alana. And on the other, I'm going to be asking the question, why, after 28 years, am I the one doing this? What happened with the police investigation, and was it sufficient? You just heard from the mouth of the senior detective in charge of the case that as of August 12, 2002, despite the suspicious circumstances of Alana's death and the presence of two unidentified DNA profiles, he believed there were no reasonable lines of investigation that should be pursued. Remember that as we move forward. As in any case, an accurate timeline of events leading up to and following a crime are incredibly important. And in Alana's case, even more so. In the first episode, you heard a news report which outlined some of the key points of Alana's case as they were known in 2002. We are going to expand on this as we continue. But before we move forward, I'll just take a moment now to highlight these again. Alana Cecil had just turned 16 years old 2 months prior to her death, sometime in the early hours of November 10th, 1996. In the previous 2 years, Alana had difficulties with drug use, and in particular, heroin. After a stint in rehab, Alana made the decision to turn her life around, and with the help of her family, kick the drug. After 3 months of sobriety, she told her parents she was to catch a bus to meet a friend, Laurel Petrocal, in Sunshine, a suburb on the outskirts of Melbourne, on the afternoon of November 9th, 1996. Earlier that morning, Alana sees an acquaintance, Vince Demiri, at the shops next to the bus stop, and meets Candice Demiri, one of her closest friends. At approximately 3 p.m, Alana again sees Candice at the Melton South shops, this time with her friend Donna Michelle. At 4:15 p.m, Alana catches the bus from Melton, which arrives at the Ardeer bus stop in Sunshine at approximately 4:45 p.m. At 5:20 p.m, the last official recorded sighting is a photo of Alana taken by an ATM camera at Deer Park near St. Albans. The grainy black and white photo shows Alana at the ATM. Right next to her is Laurel Petrocal, and standing a short distance behind is Laurel's boyfriend, Michael Marich. During this time, Petrocal and Marich tell police they met two other men, Robert Newen, otherwise known as Robert Kwok, and Mitchell Bradjick. Laurel and Michael tell police they purchased drugs and left Alana at the St. Albans station. Laurel told police Alana had taken pills and was drinking wine and vodka. In her statement, she said both her and Alana had gotten pretty blind drunk. The next day at 8 a.m. on the morning of November 10, 1996, Officer Dennis Boyer is waved down by a man walking on Station Road in Melton. The man points out the body of a young girl seated in the upright position, Alana Cecil. Boyer notes two fresh track marks, or needle marks, one in each inner arm, and one he describes as fresh with blood. Two of Alana's jean buttons are undone, and her underwear is inside out and back to front. Her bra is missing. No drug paraphernalia is found at the scene. The lower part of Alana's jeans are covered in a large amount of dirt, less so on the back. Mouth, high vaginal, low vaginal, and rectal swabs are taken. These swabs are not tested until almost 2 years later, on September 11, 1998, at the insistence of family. And all four test positive for semen. It is eventually confirmed that two unidentified male DNA profiles are present, one from the mouth swab only, and the other from the high vaginal, low vaginal and rectal swabs. Alana was known to have a fear of injecting herself and was not on birth control at the time. Alana's toxicology report showed signs of morphine, indicating heroin, but nil signs of alcohol. A number of her belongings remain missing, including her small backpack with personal items and a tight-fitting smooth bangle missing from her left arm. There are unconfirmed sightings of Alana at the Jirrawa Bonfire Festival. One witness, Leah Dewhurst, claims to have walked past the vacant address of 211 Station Road at approximately 1 a.m. on the morning of November 10th and didn't see a body in the carport, indicating Alana's body was likely placed there after this time. Like I said, I'm going to expand on this timeline, and you're going to hear from many of those named and many, many more not named. But ultimately, the key question remains. What took place between the photo taken at the ATM of Alana with Laurel Petrichow and Michael Marich, and Alana being found dumped at 211 Station Road the next morning? Who was Alana with that night? And whose are the unidentified semen DNA profiles? At least in regards to the latter question, I have that answer. And in this podcast, for the first time ever, you're going to hear who those two men are. But first, I want to work my way through this timeline, step by step, and speak to the key people involved. I want to try and understand Alana's mindset at that time, the night she left for Sunshine. So let's jump back to my interview with Peter, Cheryl, and Christine.
She turned a corner though on that.
Absolutely.
She had been clean for 3 months.
So about 3 months.
Before she died.
Yep.
And we knew she was because she was always with one of us 24/7. If I had tennis, I'd drop her off with Cheryl and pick her up on the way home. So she wasn't using for a good 3 months.
And she spent the last week with her, like her cousin came down, Melanie Gibson, and she came down and with a friend, and the purpose of that was to spend, because of the rehab and the fact that Alana had changed, and she wanted to spend the week with her, which they did. They did a lot of things together, enjoyable things, and Alana, you know, was really happy about it. Cheryl would tell you more, but she saw it. I wasn't here all the time, but, to me, Alana was really happy. The other thing about the rehab is that, the autopsy report showed that Alana had no fresh old scars bar the two fresh ones that she was found that night. So that proved, and it also disproved the investigative officer's theory, who I was really dark on, because he was always trying to prove that she was still using.
Alana's autopsy did appear to corroborate her family's belief that she hadn't been using in the months leading up to her death. Of course, this doesn't rule out the possibility that for whatever reason, that night, Alana had relapsed. It had happened before and is extremely common with recovering addicts. But it does tell us that she had been doing well and she was clean in those months. Peter just mentioned a cousin, Melanie, who had come down with a friend and spent time with Alana in the last week before her death. Immediately, I knew I needed to speak to her. As we're all aware in life, we don't often tell our parents everything we're up to. And as Melanie was only a few years older than Alana, and they were very close, perhaps she might hold some answers as to Alana's mindset that week. So I reach out to Melanie, and she's more than happy to speak. But it turns out she lives 2 hours away in Brisbane. So I pack up my gear and book the next flight.
Team, it's our pleasure having you on board. Flying us this morning, we have Captain Ben Nottingbelt alongside him's First Officer Jack Curran and Ajit Chiralangi. Our flight time to Brisbane today is approximately 1 hour and 50 minutes. Your handheld devices may be used during...
Okay, my name's Melanie and I'm Alana's cousin. We're 4 years apart, or not quite, nearly 4 years apart, but very, very close, like we're always close.
Before I even get to the door, Melanie opens it and meets me with a big smile and invites me into her lovely home. We grab a coffee and sit down at the kitchen table. And I ask her to take me back to Melton in the early 90s.
Like, she looked up to me, I don't know why, but she did. Like, I was her, you know, big cousin. Even my friend yesterday that I spoke to said, I remember how much she used to look up to you. And I said, okay. So when we moved up here, it was pretty sad, like, because I was 11, so she would have only been 8,
yeah,
maybe going on 9. And, yeah, I think that was really hard for him. And I think that's maybe not long after that's when she sort of started going a bit off the rails. But I don't know. But she wrote letters. I found them, my whole big bag of letters.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to have a look.
Yeah. I didn't open them yesterday. I found them. I went, no. But, yeah, I don't know.
So you grew up sort of, you were living in Melton until you moved away?
Yeah, we were living there. Yeah, we were in each other's pockets. Every weekend we'd be at my auntie's, or they'd be at our house or at the footy or... Yeah, we're just really close, like cousins. And Ricky and Brett, my older brother, they were the, so there was Brett and Rick and Alana and I.
Yeah.
And my older brother Darren was sort of a bit older than the rest of us, so he was on his own. But yeah, it was just every weekend, the boys would be at, like the dads would be out doing their thing, and Mum and Cheryl, their sisters. So we'd be all there and just grew up together. Like running the streets and, you know, as you did when you were kids.
Yeah.
And then when we moved up here, they probably came up once a year maybe, sometimes twice. And a friend yesterday actually said to me, I remember when Alana came up and she was on the methadone program.
Yeah.
And we'd have to take her to the chemist because I didn't have a car yet. So my girlfriend and I had take her to the chemist. She said, I remember when we had to do that. And I was like, yeah. But the last time they came up, I think she would have been maybe 15.
Yeah.
And my friends loved her. Like, she was just a cool kid. Like, she was really...
Yeah.
Everyone loved her. She was funny.
Yeah, tell me cheeky. About her personality, yeah.
Yeah, cheeky. Yeah. Very cheeky. Entertaining.
Not shy.
Easy to get along with. Yeah, really easy to get along with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like I said, we 4 year age gap, but she was quite mature. Like, I remember... when she was very young and we went down there, I think it was our family's last, like, driving holiday. I don't think we ever all went again together. But, and we'd always share a room, obviously, and she was telling me then, you know, how she went to parties and what they were getting up to, and she would have been 12. And I remember saying, oh, my God, when I was 12, I wouldn't have even known what half that stuff was. So she sort of grew up very quickly, very young.
Yeah. How did she get out to go do stuff when, you know, this...
At that age?
Yeah.
Yeah, just walk with her friends or they'd get the train or... It was, when she was younger, it was all still around Melton, you know, and they'd walk everywhere. It's not a... Did you go there?
Yeah, I've been there heaps.
Yeah, it's not a big place. No. You can pretty much walk everywhere. So back then, I assume they just walked.
Yeah. Walked. And they obviously didn't tell Peter and Cheryl, had no idea what she was up to.
No, staying at a friend's house. You know, the old trick. We've all done it.
Mm.
Yeah, staying at a friend's house and they'd go do their thing. But she was always cheeky and stubborn and, like, fiery, had her own fire. Like, she was we used to think it was funny because she was so cute, but she was a naughty little kid. Like, she was, you know, but you look at her, butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. She was this beautiful little kid, but she was a little shit, you know. But I remember... we were going somewhere and they wanted her to wear a dress. No, I don't wear dresses. I don't like dresses. And we've come over. And I've... Geez, you look pretty in this, Alana. Why don't you try this on? I said, look at my pretty dress. Off she went, put the dress on. Comes out. And their friend's gone. Good work, Mel. She would have only probably been 4, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, I would have only been 8 or whatever. But I remember... Cheryl, she won't put on a dress. And I said, watch this.
Not if her parents tell her to.
Yeah. So she was always a bit like that from very young age. Mm. just born in her, I think.
Yeah.
Just one of those personalities. You so, say yes, I'll say no. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, and a bit of a free spirit as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But she didn't have a mean streak in her. Mm. Like, she was not a mean person. Mm. She's lovely. Like, yeah, like...
Just kind of didn't want to be told what to do. That's it. By her parents.
Yes,
sort of thing.
Pretty much, yeah. Yes. But I could never have imagined her. Like, at school, everyone loved her. Like, she would never have been mean to anyone at school or,
yeah.
You know, she would, like Kingpin, like Queen Bee.
Yeah.
Because she's good at everything, you know, pretty good sport. But not mean, like, wasn't one of those bully girls.
Yeah.
She was just nice, everyone loved her.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
When you think about sort of, you know, you say those things like good at school, good at sport, she was the popular girl, you know, does it seem, sitting here now, kind of hard to believe how she ended up down that path?
Yeah. I often wonder if we hadn't moved away, would she have gone down that path? If she had someone there, like... that she looked up to, but that's hearsay, isn't it? Like, could have been me. I could have ended up down that path, being in that crap town.
Yeah. What do you think of Melton in general?
Oh, I would never. Best thing Mum and Dad did was get us out of there. Because my older brother's the same sort of personality as Alana. Like, never liked being told what to do, and he would have ended up probably not on a very good path if we had stayed there.
Yeah.
I reckon he was sort of heading that way, and he was, what, 13, 14 when we left.
Does Brisbane have that? Because I know that I've heard that in the 90s, that late 90s, that heroin in Melbourne was just shockingly bad. Did Brisbane have that same culture or not?
Didn't hear of it.
Yes.
Like, didn't hear of it, like, whether we were sheltered. But Pine Rivers, like, where we live, it's... there's always weed and, you know, but you never heard of the heavier stuff. Like, I didn't hear of that till I was in my 20s, all the party drugs and that. Like, you didn't sort of hear of it.
Yeah.
None of our friends did it, like not till you, you know, your 20s. So where did they get it? Like, where were they getting it? Was that why they were going to Sunshine?
Yeah, well, that's why they'd go, because everyone would buy from... up St Albans and Sunshine in that area. But I think that St Albans, like the train station and stuff, there would be a lot of Asians that would hang out there and sell it.
I remember, I think it might have been when we come up, she might have been 14, and she had an Asian boyfriend at the time. But he was from there, Sunshine, I think. I said, how did you meet him? Like, where's he from? And when we go to Sunshine... God, what was his name? Oh, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, so she would have been probably 14 then, maybe 13.
Yeah, wow.
Because I was probably 16, 17, I don't know. But I remember she had an Asian boyfriend. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, cool.
So like you said, you know, because that's the thing, it seems like they just sort of jump on the bus in Melton and it's just like, it's so easy to just get down there and back.
Yeah, and the train, it's only like 3 or 4 train stops, I think, Sunshine. Because I remember Julie said to me yesterday, she goes, you know what I do remember, Mel? Because I said, have you got anything that might be helpful for me, Dale? I said, I'm trying to. She said, I remember when we went into the city on the train and I thought, oh my God, this train ride goes forever. And she said, when we stopped it, she said it was a train station, and Alana's, oh, you don't want to get off here. Like, I don't get off here anymore. Because when we were there, she was good. She was clean.
You're going to start hearing names like Sunshine and St. Albans often in this podcast. Remember, it was to Sunshine that Alana caught the bus to meet Laurel Petrichow the night of the bonfire. Melanie recalls only a few days earlier, when catching the train through this area with Alana, Alana had commented that she doesn't get off here anymore. Why? Is she worried that this is the source of her drug habit and she might relapse? Or is there something more? For now, I ask Melanie to take me back to that last week Alana was alive.
Yeah, like, tell me about so that.
Before she died, yeah, she was clean.
So tell me about that last week. So you guys came, why did you come down?
For holidays, yeah. Melbourne Cup.
Okay.
So I've been down quite a few years. Like, I used to go down a bit when I turned 18, so it was good. And we went to Melbourne Cup one day. So me, Ricky, and Alana and Julie went. So the four of us.
You went to Melbourne Cup?
Yep. And we had the best day. I remember what we all wore. Like, I know what we all wore.
What
I know.
Were you wearing?
Oh, because it was cold. It was a shitty day. I had like high heels and black stockings and a skirt and a black jacket. Alana had some platforms and black tights and a black skirt and a little black and white top. So me, my friend Julie,
friend Rick, yep,
Rick and Alana, yep. Yeah, had a ball. Like, obviously we were drinking, she wasn't.
Yeah.
And Rick was 18.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And I said to Jules, what did we do after the races? Did we go out? And she couldn't remember either. But because she was 16, I'm guessing we just would have went home after.
Would you catch the train all the way back?
Yeah, or taxi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd been expensive to
Yeah, it would have been. But I think Ricky won that day.
Yeah.
I think Rick had a win. And then we went on the train. Another day, this is the sunshine day, that she said to Julie, yeah, don't get off here anymore, because she wasn't going to get drugs anymore.
Interesting. Okay.
But that's what she was telling us, anyway. And, yeah, so that day we went into the city and did some shopping, went to the Victoria Markets, had a good day there too. And on the way home on the train, she gave me a purse from Sports Girl. I said, where'd you get that? She said, I just knew you liked it, so I got it for you. And I said, oh. So she just got it for me. I'm like, oh, thanks, honey. Like,
always the rebel.
I've still got that purse. I just found it in my little box of goodies. Yeah. And that was that day. And I think we just hung out at home another couple of days. Because I was down there on holidays with a friend of mine. And we were, 19? And we were going, my nana lived in Maryborough, which is a country town about an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
So we were going there. We went there Saturday morning to go pub crawl, you know. And Alana was 16, so she wasn't going to come because she wouldn't have been able to come with us. And she said, that's cool. I've got my own stuff to do anyway. I asked my friend that I rang her yesterday that was with me. I said, do you remember, did we ask her to come with us? And Julie said, I think we did. And she said, no, she had her own stuff to do. And she wouldn't have been able to do what we were going to do anyway.
Yeah.
Because I remember Peter saying to me the next day when we got back to the house, he goes, why didn't you take her with you? He just had wanted someone to...
Of course.
Why didn't you make her go? Why didn't you take her with you? And I said, she didn't want to come. She had her own stuff to do. But I know the night that we... The morning that we left to go to Maryborough, she asked Julie, said, Jules, are you taking those shoes? And Jill said, what ones? She goes, those ones? Because we stayed in her room. And Jill said, no. She goes, oh, I'm going out. Can I borrow them? And so she wore Julie's shoes that night. So she knew she was going out.
Yes, I was going to say, what kind of shoe are we talking about?
Platforms. No, platforms. Like, 90s, platforms. This strappy, black, sort of velvety. Yeah. And I know what she wore because we bought it at... the Vic Market. She had a navy blue pair of jeans on that were low cut and a black knitted long sleeve jumper that tied up, had all different ties so it showed a bit of skin. I remember that's what she was going to wear.
Yeah.
Because she'd just bought it, but she wanted Julie's shoes.
Yeah, so that sort of tells you, I mean, as a young woman at that time, you'd know, I guess if you're going to wear those shoes, you're going to go to a party or something.
You're doing something, yeah. She knew she wanted to look good.
So if she dressed up, there was an event she was going
yeah.
to.
Like any of us, yeah.
And what time was that?
That was in the morning, so we left.
Oh, yeah, right.
How did we get there? God, I think my auntie took us. Not Cheryl, but another. I can't remember who took us to Maryborough. But that was the morning because she was planning her outfit, what she was going to wear. Because she said, does this look good?
And so tell me about that last time you saw her.
That was it.
Yeah. So you're running out the door and she's getting changed into clothes. Yeah.
She was just showing us what do you reckon, you know, while we were packing up, like packing our bag.
Yeah.
Because we didn't take our whole suitcase, obviously, because we were just going to Maryborough for the night,
yeah,
or two nights, or whatever it was meant to be. So we left, you know, just took what we needed, and what are we going to wear out? What do we wear? Like Jill's and I were saying, and Alana's, oh, I'm going to wear this. Like, you know, girls discussing clothes.
Yeah.
And she picked her outfit, so that's how I knew what she was wearing that night.
And that week, so that's the ninth. And you were there for pretty much the whole week before that.
Yeah.
And so that whole week, what was her demeanour like and everything? Just normal?
Yeah, good. She didn't go anywhere that we didn't know where she was going. Like, she hung around us the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I thought she was clean then. Like, she didn't disappear anywhere. She didn't... I think she'd been clean a few months before she died by memory, but I don't know.
Well,
I don't think she would have told us if she... was doing anything.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Just to be clear, Melanie and her friend are going to a nearby town called Maryborough to stay with her grandmother and for a night on the town. As Alana is only 16, she can't attend any bars. Although Mel tells me this wouldn't have stopped her if she wanted to. But Alana made it clear to them she had her own plans. She borrowed a pair of platform shoes and dressed herself well for whatever event it was she was planning on attending. Mel says she could be wrong, but believes it was to attend the Jerriwa Bonfire Festival. Mel and her friend wave goodbye. And this would be the last time she ever saw Alana alive.
So you go to Maryborough, and then what happens from there?
We wake up pretty early, pretty hungover actually. And my nana... her brother and his wife live next door, and they've come over. And we were standing in the kitchen, and Nana's just looked at her and screamed like this. Like Julie said the same thing to me yesterday. Never forget your Nana's. Like, she howled like she was dying, like someone was ripping her chest out. And I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, what? And then I sort of just put two and two together, and I ran off to the toilet and vomited. And my friend followed soon after me. We were just, it's just horrible. So bad. Like, Nana was just, she was never the same after that. Like, it's like her heart did get ripped out. It was a bit, shit. And then my auntie come picked us up and took us back to the house. I didn't want to go in. I did not want to go in. Like, my auntie was a mess. I didn't remember this, but Julie, my friend, told me yesterday that they had to call a doctor to sedate Cheryl. But I don't remember that. So remember we got there and there was a doctor there because Cheryl was just losing it. Like, and yeah, I remember looking in their room and there was like undies on the bed and, you know, clothes on the floor, like she was just coming home to, you know, put her clothes in the wash. Like,
yeah.
It's just, it was so bad. Like, I've never experienced anything like it. Probably won't again, I don't think. It was just, horrible.
Yeah.
And you didn't know what to do. Like, it was like, just unreal. I'd never lost anyone yet. I still had all my grandparents. Like, I hadn't lost a family member. And it was just, you didn't know what to do. Didn't know what to say to anyone. Like, to Ricky, to Cheryl, like, Peter. Like, it was just horrible. Like, wouldn't want anyone to go through that. It was horrible. Like, I just, I don't know. But it was just nightmare. It was like you're walking into a nightmare. They just said she was found dead at an abandoned house. So we didn't really know what happened, or I don't even know when we found out. I don't know. I'd say... it's a bit of a blur. It's all a bit of a blur. I think I tried to block it out. I haven't spoken about this stuff for years and years.
think sometimes our brains just, like, you know, you do sort of just, it compartmentalizes those things and you do sort of block it out a little bit.
Yeah, and we drank a lot too afterwards.
I bet.
Like we did, like my family all come down. And, yeah, we were all there for, like, the week after, waiting for the funeral. And remember at the funeral, all these young girls there, and I'm just death staring all of them, thinking, which one of you little cows was there? What one of you knows what happened? And I was just, these poor kids, I'm just looking at them, like, with daggers, like, just wanted to go up and shake them all. What happened? Were you there? What was... But I didn't. I left them alone, poor kids. I remember looking at the funeral, looking sideways at my dad. Never seen him cry. He had tears running off his nose. And I just thought, yeah. Peter was angry, but very sad. He's a very emotional human, Peter. Maybe more so now. He never used to be before all of this. But it ruined him. He's has not stopped. Like, it's been the everything to him. Just trying to find out what happened to his little girl.
Yeah.
And it's ruined his life. Like, he's so up and down. And you know, I don't know too much about what they have found and what... Like, I know he's written to every single person he possibly could and time and time and time again. But I've never really known the results of all that, obviously not much. And I know that there's been a lot of wrongdoing in the police department, I think. Well, they didn't do enough at the start, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there's Alana's grave here. So we, like I said, we come down. Then, well, you know, the anniversary birthdays and Christmases, and we decorate it. This is the plot I've actually bought. So we made sure, you know, I want to be buried with Alana. And Cheryl and Christine will be buried here as well. When I come down here, I normally bring something, like, you know, I'll certainly clean the place, and then say some words to Alana. There's a tree here, this gum tree here. I normally visualise Alana looking down on me with other people, the family, like my mother and that. I know it's a bit strange, but I just feel like that's a good way thing that she's here, and that she's looking down on me and knowing that I'm here to look after her. And, like, there's one time I actually spotted an owl. I've never seen an owl here ever, like the owl I spotted. And I thought, wow, this is a bit of a miracle, because and I thought, well, owl, it just was staring at me, and I thought, well, this is strange that Alana, so this tree I always look up to when I'm here. And as you can see now, I've got some tears welling for that reason. And, yeah, so we, but as if, you know, her site's probably one of the better, like, I know I do it on purpose, but I'll go shopping every year to try to get the right decoration, right things that Alana would love. Right, colours, and other Cheryl comes down, puts her flowers in here, and we get together, Christine and that, and we got the lights, and it looks really pretty. I've taken photos and put it on her site every year since she probably died, and so 23 years or whatever. And I've just sort of continued to make sure her friends and that see it, and make sure they still remember that she's, you know, she's here. And And yeah, so it's, yeah, and I talk to Alana in the sense that we talk, I just say that I wish her she's still here and I love her and that I'm still fighting the cause. I won't ever give up. But she knows that. And then she can rest in peace as well, because I don't believe she's resting in peace till we do it, and till her father and her family solve the problem and solve the case, and she gets what she deserves, and that's it. And so, yeah, the cemetery here is significant. I know she's always here to come to from there to talk, but, there's nothing much more I can say about this. Like I said, it brings tears to my eyes. I struggle with it a bit. I just, it brings back, like, as Cheryl said today, she was just an innocent girl, and the people who did her, there's no respect for her, and, she didn't deserve what happened to her. No one deserves it, but she didn't deserve it. She wasn't that type. She never went and did anything to those people that would have done anything.
She wasn't hurting anyone else.
No, she wasn't. She was just out there, as Cheryl said, she was going out that night to just enjoy herself. And she was good. I was surprised today. Cheryl said exactly what I was thinking, because sometimes people when I say it, they think, oh, you're your dad, you're a father, blah, 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 and say that you're just saying that. But, the proof's in the pudding in the autopsy report. But Cheryl came out today and said, she's going fine. And Melanie will back that up. Melanie Gibson, her first cousin, who spent that last week with her, come down purposely because she was going so well and spent a good time with her. And she was bright as a button. In fact, she told Candy they were going back to school. They arranged it, but whether that's true or not, but it's in her statement. And but that's what she was like. I sincerely and believe that the battle was won, but she was stolen that night by these deviants. Who are they? And it's been planned, whether it was planned or not. It's obviously, she had no hope. But I the worst thing from a father's point of view is it still irks me. I worry about the fact that she might have suffered, because a lot of them wouldn't have let them do what they did to her without a fight. She would have fought back, but she mightn't have had any chance, depending on how many there were involved, like the other thing. And you got to remember the bangle, the tight-fitting bangle was not on her. So if they grabbed her by the bangle and stuff, like held her back, if they injected her, they only took one quick injection and, one instead of the heroin. But, that could be far-fetched, but I always wonder, because no one knows to this day what happened and whether she suffered at the hands of these people. And to me, she suffered with the sex anyway, because that's not Alana, and she was desecrated. So she was no child, no parent should have to bury the child. And there's been many parents who do, but when under circumstances like this, it's it makes it incredibly more difficult, especially when I keep telling people, when you're the father of a daughter who's been treated like an animal, and the way she was, she's my only daughter, and I'm going through the process of what I went through with her, the fight and everything, and getting her well, getting her going, to have her stolen the way she did. I mean, and she was a beautiful girl, and as I said, a beautiful daughter, and just stolen at the wrong time. Like she had the world at her feet when she was going, as her mother said. And it's not fair. It's a fight. It's like I said, getting in the boxing ring, going 10 rounds, 15 rounds, and hopefully at the end you don't get knocked out and she doesn't get knocked out and she wins the game, wins the boxing match, and she did. She actually came out on top in the end. And that's where, that's where we're all on top of the world as well. Felt great. And, we were very pleased for her because we're having witnessed the battle of her coming out. And
her achievement, like, you got to give her credit. The fight, to go through what she did for that period of her life and then own up and say, look, I don't want to do this anymore. And then get to herself going, become, you know, back to normal, get the family oriented. Friends were all, everybody was thought, gee, this is fantastic, Alana. Go bang, bang, bang. She's setting goals. And then one night,
out of the blue,
it's gone. Blown out of the water. And she's gone. And we haven't been able to obviously speak to her and find, you know, we didn't get a chance to do anything. And all we got left with is, like I said, left with her. She's here in spirit. And that's all we got. But I would have loved, like, one thing we did miss out on as a father. And, you know, when I see the other girls, our friends now, they've all got children, they're married. You know, Alana didn't get that opportunity, and it's not fair on her. And she would have made a good mother because she loved young kids. She always got them. Her and Ricky both really gravitated with kids. They always laughed. You know, there was any young child brought in the place, they both play with them. And it's the only owl I've ever seen in Melton.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's steering right.
I told Christine, I saw a miracle today. I said, I saw an owl. And I was doing visual. Yeah, you know, I don't know what I do. And there's this owl. I said, it kept staring down at me. I thought, hey, what's going on? You know, I just couldn't get over it. I just thought it was Alana in an owl form.
And you never saw that owl again?
Just saw that once.
Native Americans believe that owls have a correlation to death and the afterlife, and consider them to be the embodiment of a spirit. Peter doesn't come across as a spiritual man. By his own admission, he's a man of fact and science. But I can only imagine the emotion that must have been running through him at that moment when he looked up in that tree above Alana's grave that day and saw a lone owl staring back at him. He described it himself as a miracle. Peter has put the whole weight of responsibility of Alana finally getting the justice she deserves on his shoulders. And over the last 28 years, that has been an incredibly heavy load to bear. We're slowly working our way through the evidence of this case. And like I've said before, there's a long way to go. But I truly believe that once the facts are laid bare for all to see, that we'll be able to shoulder some of that burden Peter carries. And with your help, give Alana peace. Guilt is a Brevity Studios production, written, produced, and narrated by me, Ryan Wolfe. All opinions expressed in this podcast are exactly that. Opinions, and are not a statement of fact by the podcast itself. All persons named are presumed innocent unless proven otherwise in a court of law. You'll find further photos and videos and daily updates on my Instagram, RyanWolfNZ. The fantastic original score was produced specifically for this season of Guilt by Sam Morgan at sunroomsound.com. If you're looking for original music for your project, check out his great work. Our new and improved website, theguiltpodcast.com, was designed by Jacob at Medio Street Media. If you're looking for any help with web, brand design, or digital marketing, you'll find them at mediostreetmedia.com. Guilt is a 100% independent production. We've never received a single dollar in taxpayer funding. You can support us to continue to make great content, plus get ad-free listening, bonus episodes, and early release by becoming a Brevity Plus subscriber on Apple or Acast Plus. You'll find all the details on how to subscribe at theguiltpodcast.com. This podcast was written and edited without the use of AI.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.